getting a presentation for the public service and administration bill as we did get in the past. The department will actually indicate to us how are they going to approach the entire discussion, and therefore we will follow through in terms of the discussion along that. So they will actually do the introduction among themselves. As you know, the Department of Public Safety and Administration, don't take it for granted that if you know such a person and was occupying that position still like that, it changes many a times than often. So it's best if we allow them to introduce themselves to us, and so that we can do mistakes, and that's how we're that's what we're going to follow. We're going to allow the department to introduce themselves and indicate how they're going to approach the discussion at hand, and then we'll follow through in terms of if we are all in understanding in terms of what is happening, so that we are all clear at the end of the day. Over to the department now. Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I've been asked to make the presentation, and my name is Alvin Pumuzo-Rabea. I'm currently acting DDG policy, and I am accompanied by my colleagues, and we also have amongst us even representatives from the State Law Advisors Office. I will ask them to introduce themselves, starting with the advocate close to me, who is my mentor in law. Yes.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members and colleagues. Mendes Simelane, advisor in the ministry. Thank you.
Morning, Honorable Members. My name is Swazi Taitai from DPSA. Thank you.
Morning, Honorable Members. My name is Nolu Thando Bikasha from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members and colleagues. I'm Dlarani Pongondwana from DPSA in the Office of Standards and Compliance. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Melissa Chikila. I am the Acting DDG for Legal Services. My full-time job is being the Chief Negotiator of the State.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to remind the honorable members that remind honorable members that the bill that we're presenting is not new to them. We presented it in November, and it was submitted to Parliament, to the National Assembly, and then it was withdrawn and introduced through the NCOP because it's Section 76 of the Constitution Bill. So what we will be presenting here is the process since it was withdrawn and placed in the NCOP, and how far have we gone in the NCOP. And we will also just remind members in terms of what is the content of the bill. But Honorable Chair, you will have to guide me if you want to us to go into that details, because it will be the presentation that you have had before.
Okay, if then I were to suggest on that one, you can briefly just give a background to bring us on board again, just to recall, but then get into the details of what you intended briefing us.
Maybe
the handsome Honourable Murray.
Maybe when addressing that, maybe if we can, and I don't know whether you know this is fair to ask from the department to respond. I just thought maybe it was through the use that we've always had. Normally, when a bill is referred to the NCOP from the National Assembly, it's after we have accepted it in Parliament and then the Speaker said it gets referred to the NCOP. Here we know that it hasn't been concluded in the NCOP, although in the committee by the NCOP, it is only debated next week in terms of their schedule. So is it correct that we are dealing now, or how does that work? Maybe just inform me in terms of, you know, can it go concurrently? It just sounds unfamiliar to me in terms of how we normally refer it to the NCOP. Thank you.
Okay, maybe I will have to respond to that one. In terms of the committee's program, we are able to call for any presentation that we actually require. You know, if we, for instance, if you can remember, the item on this bill had always been part of our agenda. So we are aware of the procedure that you talk about. In this instance, it is our information as the committee. We wanted a presentation from the department, which therefore meant, yes, of course, it went to the NCOP. We will get it from them where they are, and then we can make a determination. But, of course, on our program, as a committee, we have already scheduled to have a bill with that knowledge that the NCOP has finalized it, and it's coming. We don't want to start the briefings after, also considering the time that the House is going to rise. That is why then we actually had to get a brief ourselves as the committee, you know, all other proceedings, because if you have noticed yesterday, the advert has gone out. We are just putting ourselves ahead in terms of just knowing what is happening. That is why even giving them the freedom of how to present, you know, what is the information, part of informing ourselves just as the committee.
Well, thank you very much for that clarity. Just another question in that regard. I know it has been withdrawn from us and submitted to them. Now, has it been resubmitted to us, or can we act on that without it being resubmitted to us? Because I know we know that the minister withdrew it from us and submitted to NCOP, but I haven't seen anything that has been resubmitted.
Okay,
to us.
I was taking it that their brief will actually indicate how far have they gone in terms of the NCOP and how far they are. So that is the information I'm looking forward to actually also capture from their presentation.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. The bill, as we already know, it was introduced in the National Council of Provinces on the 14th of November, 2013. And referred to provinces to obtain mandates in January 2014. The provinces engaged on the mandating process, and this mandating process, it also involved public participation between the 22nd of January and the 11th of February. Eight provinces held a total of 18 public participation meetings, and Gauteng chose to invite written submissions. In the first round of the negotiations, eight provinces supported the bill with proposed amendments and comments for consideration by the department. And the Western Cape did not support the bill. The DPSA then considered the proposed amendments and comments, and we made recommendations to the select committee in terms of which areas can we put in for amendments, which areas we believe it's not necessary to effect an amendment. And there's a document that has been circulated which gives a matrix with reasons why those proposed amendments were not effected. Throughout this whole process, there was only one technical amendment to Clause 7 of the bill which was accepted. Although from our report we indicated that there's two amendments that we can accept under Clause 8.4, which was an added clause which talks about if there's a contract that has been awarded and a public servant was involved in that company, that contract should be nullified. The legal advisors indicated that it's not necessary to have that. So subsequent to that, only one technical amendment on Clause 7 was accepted. And so the bill that was finally adopted yesterday by the Select Committee, which was yesterday, the 26th of February, it only had that technical amendment, which we overlooked that the province, the Premier and the MECs can actually assign functions to local government under Section 126 and 137 of the Constitution. And that's one issue that we didn't put in there. So that technical adjustment was done on the bill. Six provinces submitted their mandates in support of the bill yesterday, and the three provinces had not submitted their final mandates on the date of the meeting. I must indicate that also in that meeting there was a submission from the Western Cape that indicated that they are against the bill, but it was not in the letterhead. So they said until that, if it's not on the letterhead, it's assumed that no mandate was submitted. So the conclusion at the end of the meeting is that six provinces submitted their mandates and they are in support of the bill. The bill has to go now to the NCOP, the plenary. It hasn't gone through the NCOP, but the Select Committee has adopted the bill. That's how far we are. Chairperson, I don't know at this point, should I go into the section of what the bill looks like?
Possibly members would have some questions just to clear if they need to do that before you go into the content. For an example, I would like to know the date that is already, to know the date that NCOP has already set for plenary.
And also, Madam Chair, if it has been reintroduced to the Assembly.
The NCOP, the
plenary first.
The NCOP, it's going to meet on the 4th of March, and that's where the bill is going to be tabled. So it has to go through that process before it's referred to the National Assembly.
Honourable Detroit?
I've come across in other spheres of government that the mayor or some executive may present a counsel to a decision and then refer to a legal opinion, and then the legal opinion is not in front of the councillors, or like yesterday in Cape Town, I believe that people did not receive timely information. And we're upset about it. You're saying here that as a legal opinion, I would suggest, where is it? Because are you suggesting that I must legislate on hearsay about what's in the legal opinion? Or, you know, it means you say to me, there's a legal opinion, the legal opinion is like this, and it's okay, it's nothing to worry about, and it's fine. And yet, I must legislate without seeing the legal opinion. Is that a suggestion?
Thank you. I don't understand the honourable member because I don't recall talking about legal opinion. Which part was it? I just want clarity.
Yeah, we are all a bit lost. Maybe a little bit of clarity.
I'll just say what I've heard. I've heard that there was a legal opinion on some of the clauses, or some of the. Maybe I missed something there, but there was a mention of a legal opinion on some of the clauses. That was said now. Or maybe I missed something. Maybe it was not rightly expressed, but that's what I heard. That's why I ask it.
Possibly, yeah. The clause number 7 that we're talking about, maybe we're referring to that. I don't know, but it was not a legal opinion, isn't it?
Okay. When I refer to that, because in our report, we recommended to the Select Committee. And the Select Committee is advised by the parliamentary legal advisers in terms of what should go in or not. Why I raise that is that you shouldn't find what is in the notes that I've given you different from what we are saying was the final decision. But it's not our legal opinion. When the NCOP makes the final referral, they will consider all those issues. And remember, this bill, it's not our bill at all. It's the NCOP bill. It's now a parliament bill. All we do is when we are requested, we go and we do as requested by parliament. But at the end of the day, it's parliament that will decide on what goes into the bill. We got our own advices when it was the bill of the executive before we referred it to Parliament. Right now, we are just assisting where we are requested to assist. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Detoy?
Yeah, thank you. That is more clear, but I would just like to know if there were any legal opinions expressed in this process, and if it is possible that we have it at some time before we make a decision, because otherwise, you know, it's a hearsay and it's an interpretation, and that is to me that is problematic.
Honourable Nyakembe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think for me is I like the manner in which the department in presenting their presentation. They started by reminding us that the bill from Cabinet was sent to the National Assembly. That is us. And in that process, it was withdrawn from the National Assembly. It was then sent to the NCOP. Now, the NCOP concluded on the bill yesterday. Of what? The NCOP, let the English people not interrupt me.
Not English. I'm English.
The NCOP,
William, hold on.
The NCOP decided on the bill yesterday. bill has not yet been submitted to the National Assembly. But the committee wanted to know how far are you in the processes in the NCOP? What have you done? What has not been done? Now, I'm worried to say if then now we will change. If we are asking those questions on the basis of the process, but change asking questions to the content of the bill, then now I will be having a problem. Because we are sitting here saying that the sitting in the NCOP has not yet now endorsed the bill. But at the same time, we want information that has not been concluded by the NCOP, the sitting of the NCOP. I thought that maybe the questions will be in the process that has just been outlined as to where is the bill, how was it handled by the select committee in the NCOP, where is the bill now? And there was a very good question that was asked by Honorable Murray as to whether the House in NCOP, has it endorsed the bill, and then has the bill been reintroduced to the National Assembly? Then the answer was no. Now, but the questions that we're asking now, we're pushing questions as if the House in this NCOP has endorsed the bill and the bill has been referred to the National Assembly.
Okay, maybe based on this discussion and also what the members are asking and what Honorable Nyakembe is indicating, possibly what we need to find out from the committee is that do you really want information on it? Because it's information giving. It was just to inform us how far and what is happening so that when the bill comes, we have information. That's simply what we planned as a committee. And, of course, that is why I was circulating our program to all members so that they can comment. If they felt this was an unnecessary item, they could have indicated. But I believe because we will be dealing with the bill the coming week, you know, it is necessary for us to get the information. So this is just information giving. It does not necessarily have any legal implications. It's a simple work of the committee where we're overseeing the department, finding out how far have they gone, what is happening, where is the NCOP, so that immediately we see it next week on Thursday. We are better informed. We got some crumbs of information. We go and do our own work. We come and convene on Thursday, because on Thursday, when we look at our schedule, then it will be a legal process. Honorable Murray.
Chairperson, just another question. The bill that we are looking at, it seems like it is not the bill, the amended bill by the NCOP. It is still the original bill introduced in the NCOP.
Okay, can I just interrupt there, because my opinion is that they haven't actually shared information as yet. It's just unfair
I'm just talking about this bill that has been given to us.
But do we want to get a presentation first?
Yes,
then
but
we
I
have
just
a discussion. Can we discuss all those factors,
yes,
including
but Madam
that?
Chair, Madam Chair, just, I mean, we have seen in some of the other committees, and I've now served for a couple of weeks in the trade industry, and chairperson there has used the examples of what they have learned by doing procedurally incorrect, and then it boomerangs. So we don't want that. If we're finished with it, we're finished with it. So, because I just want to know whether, and the advert that has been placed, was it in terms of the bill that we have got, or the bill that we are still waiting for? So on what will the public submissions be done based on? On a NCOP bill or an NA bill? Just procedurally.
Honorable members, I'm repeating myself. I need to find out from the committee members, do you want the information? Because there's nothing legal about the process we're doing. It's simply committee work where we're seeking for information, filling ourselves. There is no legal implication. We always get presentation, different kind of presentations. This is a presentation in terms of how far is the bill to inform us. We will be doing our work. we'll be dealing with the legal processes starting from next week once the bill is officially from our side. I think the members must guide me if they want this information or not, so that we don't keep dilly-dallying and getting all the kind of questions. You know, because I was not dealing with anything legal at the moment. I was just dealing with getting information. And, of course, members should have said on the program that they're not comfortable with behaving this. We can stop it. If the members feel uncomfortable to get the information, it's fine. Rather than us now starting to refer to the legal implications, it's a committee oversight meeting like all other committee oversights. And my opinion is that we wanted to get information. Even before the information comes now, we're starting to pose all forms of information. It looks like possibly we're not ready or willing to have this meeting, and the members never told me that I shouldn't put that agenda item on the agenda. We have a program, we're seated in a meeting now, then we're starting to pull all other issues. I think it's unfair. Can I have what were you saying, Honorable Detoit, Honorable Nyakembe, Honorable Detoit, Honorable, yes, let's start with yourself, Honorable Detoit, Nyakembe, and Honorable Mare, in that order. Muhali's hand is up. Sorry, I didn't notice.
Chairperson, I think you mustn't make the conclusion that we don't want to be here. If we gave anybody in the committee gave the impression, I don't think it's necessarily that. But the next, I just want to point out, the next, we are here for information and to see how the process is going. I appreciate that. And you know, I'm always play the ball, I play the facts, and I'm not making cheap politics about things. But the next slide there, coming on after that one, is this intergovernmental interface, and it says addressing local government concerns.
This is where we are unfair, Honourable Members. We haven't seen that information because the presentation hasn't been done, and we're already in trade discussion.
Okay, but
that's
then, okay, if you give me a question once we're on that page, then I'm happy. Will you do that? Thank you. Okay.
Honourable Nyakembe.
Thank you very much. I think it's important sometimes for us to reflect back, even before the bill was introduced to the National Assembly, where the department was still busy with the bill and the cabinet, which at that particular time has not referred the bill to the National Assembly. This committee, with members of all parties that are partaking in this committee, we have been getting briefing. And at that particular time, nobody ever said, how can the department come and brief the committee on something that has not been submitted to the National Assembly? There has been no questions. So, now, when the department has been requested through your office, Chairperson, to come and brief this committee because the bill that is in the NCOP is a bill that was introduced to the NA and then withdrawn from NA. Now, the committee is aware, because when the bill was withdrawn, it was not to say we are nullifying PEM bill. Not at all. Now, the issue here, Chair, is how far they have gone in the NCOP. Why is that? In order for ourselves as the portfolio committee in the National Assembly to be ready when the bill comes to us, we understand which process has been undertaken in the NCOP. Now, Chairperson, when somebody doesn't want something, the person does not say it. That's why in English they say, actions speak louder than words. Because now if you listen to the line of questions, which has got nothing to do with the presentation that has been presented, in relation to the process after the bill has been withdrawn, I think, Chairperson, the committee now is aware that the select committee yesterday adopted the bill with technical amendments at that level. Technical amendments that has not yet been submitted to the National Assembly. But we are aware that there were technical amendments that were identified in the process of the Select Committee. There might be other technical amendments by the House in the SOP. We don't know. There might be no. Now, we know that as of today, the NCOP, the House of NCOP, has not been, in fact, the bill has not presented now to the House of the NCOP. It will be presented to the House of the NCOP according to their program. I think we are done as the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration, Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay, honourable members, you know, there's one thing that I just need to put across. You know, if the committee was going to operate in a way that you put up a program and it gets challenged when the presentation has to happen, we're not going to have a committee. And I'm glad that we never had this. It only happens now. You know, was the committee program is always put before the committee and the committee approves. If this is how we would be operating all along, honestly, we wouldn't have a committee. To me, I feel it's completely unfortunate that when we are supposed to just get a presentation, then we get something like this. I wish the members could have raised that in advance, that they do not need this kind of a presentation. I must be honest with you, honorable members, for us it's not an issue.
Yeah.
We do have study groups. We could have had our own study group. I thought I'm assisting the committee as the chairperson of the committee. I wasn't aware that I'm bringing the committee to just an, you know, a squabble before the presentation. It's never happened. It's just a squabble before the presentation. There's nothing, you know, on this. And I thought I'm just, it's information sharing. Otherwise, I could have taken these matters to our own study groups so we can discuss and do this. And we do have study groups from different parties, you know. But I thought it's reasonable and sensible for a chairperson of the committee to bring a presentation and a discussion where all committee members are fairly sharing information. But if then, you know, I'm glad it ever ends. You know, if we're going to have meetings where before there's a presentation, every item that is presented is challenged, I think we're going to report that there was never a committee. But it has never happened. I'm really amazed. How would it go to this extent?
No,
and honestly speaking, honorable members, I really take serious exceptions.
Okay.
If we're supposed to have a presentation and a discussion start at the beginning, I wish in future for those that will be here, approach things differently. Challenge the program rather than challenging a presentation when it's supposed to be done.
Madam Chair, now we will listen to the presentation. I just want to put it on record. We did send the letter. We didn't get a response.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, honorable members. I just want to remind members what challenges are we trying to address with this bill. We want to build a framework legislation that will give us what we call a uniform system of public administration, a seamless system of public administration, that when you enter any public administration building in any sphere of government, the feeling must be the same. You shouldn't say, now I'm entering a local government public administration building and this is how I'm going to be treated. When you go into provincial, this is how you're going to be treated. You must feel the same and be able to be serviced in line with the Constitution, Section 195. We are, through this bill, also addressing the challenges raised by the Auditor General and other state entities on the problems and challenges faced by government. A number of challenges in terms of capacity at local government. We had targets where we were saying that we will have clean audit, but the Auditor General has realized that with the kind of capacity that we have at local government, then it becomes very difficult to actually to reach that. We are responding to the National Development Plan by making provisions in the bill that are catalysts for building of a capable state. Issues that we are bringing in there, like the establishment of the National School of Government, the issue of ensuring that public servants don't do business with the state, are issues that in section in chapter 13 and 14 of the National Development Plan have been raised, and we believe through this bill we will be able to address those issues. Through this bill, we are ensuring that there is a streamlined set of values throughout all three spheres of government, and those values and principles are outlined in the Constitution under Section 195. We are taking on board concerns which have been raised by members of Parliament, for example, the concerns of officials doing business with the state. And we believe through this we will be able to deal with equitable distribution of resources across the three spheres of government. And we have made sure, that's why the bill that was published in May 2013, it had about 133 pages. And the bill that it's before Parliament only has 17 pages, because we have listened to the inputs that have come, and we have ensured that the bill does not undermine or interfere with the constitutional mandates of local government. Rather, the bill seeks to ensure compliance with the Constitution by complementing public administration that is integrated across the three spheres of government. And the issue about integration, but ensuring that the independence of those institutions in terms of the Constitution is respected. The bill also does not undermine or interfere with the powers of the provincial governments, and in many areas wherein the minister had to determine the norms and standards or do regulations, there will be consultation within all the three spheres. The bill ensures that the realization of the values and the principles contained in Section 1951 of the Constitution. And we believe, honorable members, that each clause in the bill seeks to address or solve particular problems related to the management of public administration.
So we are not going to wait until we just finish and then get into.
Chair, I have a matter of clarity on the previous page 6. That it says that the bill does not undermine. There's a few statements.
Can you request another member? Let's allow the presentation. Can you hold on? You keep the question. Can you just hold on so that we can capture? We have also noted some things that you want to raise. But if we can do that, maybe we might not finish the presentation. Can we allow the presentation to be finalized?
Now, honorable members, I will go briefly into what is contained in the bill, starting with clause 1. And I just highlighted a few definitions. These are not all the definitions that are in the bill. The definitions that we're using there is the definitions that in the presentation itself we will be talking to. And some of the definitions that we believe that it's important to highlight. First, on the definition of the employee, it means a person appointed in the public administration, but it excludes a person appointed as a special advisor in terms of Section 12A of the Public Service Act. and a person performing similar functions in a municipality. And when it comes to the definition of a family member, in relation to any person means his or her parent, sister, brother, child, or spouse, including a person living with that person as if they were married to each other, namely a spouse or a life partner. Whether such relationship results from birth, marriage, or adoption, including any other relative who resides permanently with a member, and including any other relative who is of necessity dependent on such a person. And we define an institution which means a national department, a provincial department, a municipality, or a national or provincial government component. And in some of the interactions that we had at the provincial legislatures and in public hearings, there were people who were questioning, why are you not defining a head of an institution? But the issue is, once you define an institution, when you add a head, it will mean the head of that institution as defined in under the institution. And by public administration, we mean a public service which it's going to be the national and provincial and municipalities and their employees. Clause 2 deals with the application of the bill, and we say this bill will apply to public administration, which is excluding public entities. It's only the public service, municipalities, and their employees, including government components, because at national you get government components. Section 1952 of the Constitution provides that the principle governing public administration applies to administration in every sphere of government, organs of states, and public enterprises. And in this case, as I said, this bill only applies to the spheres of government. It doesn't include your public entities and public enterprises and other organs of state that are not part of those three spheres of government. And you will see in the bill itself these areas wherein we talk about, like when we talk about doing business with the state, and we don't say doing business with the organs of state, because the state, there are some organs of state that are not part of the state. So when we talk about the state, it's all inclusive. Clause 5 to 7 deals with mobility of staff within public administration. We believe that, and this is the core, the crux of this bill, that greater mobility of staff and transfer of functions from one sphere to another is desirable in certain instances to allow services to be delivered at the most appropriate sphere and to enable deployment of staff to where they are most needed in government. Currently, if you are in one municipality, when you move to another one, you have to resign and you even lose your year of service. It gets cut, you have to start from scratch. But with this bill, it will enable people to move, and they will retain the years of service that they have. To enhance mobility within public administration, the bill also provides for transfer of employees with their consent. So in terms of transfers, the employee gives the last word and say, I don't want to be transferred. Where there are skill shortages, employees with necessary skills and knowledge may be seconded without their consent, if secondment is justified. But when it comes to secondment, as opposed to transfers, the employer, when it comes to secondment, will have the last say. But having the last say after considering the submissions from the employee, to look into their circumstances, and if it's justifiable, then the employer can transfer. The bill also provides for transfer of employees upon the transfer or assignment of function as provided in Section 97, 99, 126, and 137 of the Constitution. And I think in the previous presentation that we did, 126 and 137 was not there. And that's the technical amendment that I said was effected in the bill that will be referred. Clause 8 to 9 deals with prohibitions and disclosures, and these prohibitions on conducting business with the state and disclosure of financial interest. And for the purpose of, I stated the definition of an employee upfront, but for the purposes of this clause, employee includes persons contemplated in Section 12A of Public Service Act and a person performing similar functions in a municipality. So your special advisors and advisors who are there will be affected by this clause. So they get defined as employees under these two clauses. As part of promoting professional ethics and integrity by employee, the bill prohibits employees from conducting business with the state or being a director of a public or private company conducting business with the state. And failure to comply with this prohibition constitutes a serious misconduct, and it's also an offense, and it may result in the termination of employment, and if found guilty of this, you could also be sentenced to a term of not more than 5 years, and there will be a fine also imposed. Employees are required to disclose their financial interests and the financial interests of their spouses and persons living with them as if they were married to each other. And failure to comply with the obligation to disclose financial interests as required constitutes misconduct. In this one year, there were people who were racing to say, why are you not saying this is a serious misconduct? The issue of disclosure, it should be treated on its merit. Whereas when you're doing business with the state, it's very serious. So that's why we are saying it's a misconduct. The merits of the case will determine how it's going to be addressed. Clause 10 to 13 deals with capacity development and training. The bill seeks to promote capacity development of employees by providing for establishment of the National School of Government. The school must, through education and training, promote progressive realization of values and principles governing public administration and enhance quality, extent, and impact of development of human resource capacity in institutions. And the school is going to be established in terms of the Higher Education Act, and the bill requires the head of the institution, through education and training of its employees, to develop human resource capacity in the institution to level that enables institution to perform its function in an efficient, quality, and collaborative and accountable manner. So this school now, for the first time, you will have a school that is going to be responsible for all three spheres of government. And its method of teaching is not going to be what Palama has now, because currently Palama is a middle man or woman. They get the request from departments and go and look for somebody who is going to provide that, be it a consultant or they go to a university, and then they bring those people to present the programs. What is different in this one, it's going to have its own teaching staff. The National School of Government will have its own teaching staff. It will have a faculty which is going to have teaching staff. Some of them will be drawn from current serving public servants, some of them retired public servants, And there will still be collaborations with the other institutions of higher learning. But the emphasis will be for practical training, ensuring that the people understand how the public service works. Because we always assume that if you come from an university with a public administration degree, or you have got a master's, we give you a desk and we expect you to produce immediately. And that doesn't necessarily happen. So the school is going to be addressing that. Even some of the current serving public servants, you find that they've come in and they have never been involved in terms of how public administration works, the interface between the administration, parliament, and so on. And all of a sudden, they are given tasks which require them to actually interact, and you find that, oh, no, all they know is about debit and credit. They have never interacted with it. So those are the things that the school is going to bring, and ensuring that the values in the constitution are actually inculcated in the teaching of the school. Clause 14 deals with information and communication technology. The bill requires a head of an institution to acquire and use information and communication technologies in a manner which leverages economies of scale to provide for cost-effective service, ensure the interoperability of its information system with information systems of other institutions to enhance internal efficiency and services. And the issue about interoperability will help us. If we want reports, the interoperability will allow you to access reports from any institution in public administration without going to each one giving you paper information. So what is required from the head of the institution is make sure that your system that you procure is going to be interoperable with the rest of the institutions, so that we'll be able to report centrally and efficiently. The head of the institution must make sure that they eliminate unnecessary duplication of information and communication technologies in the public administration and ensure security of its information system. Clause 15 deals with ethics and integrity. And here we want to build a public administration grounded by professional ethics, integrity, and discipline, which is critical for the realization of values contained in Section 1951 of the Constitution. The bill establishes the Public Administration Ethics, Integrity, and Disciplinary Technical Assistance Unit, which will provide, amongst others, technical assistance and support to institutions in all spheres of government regarding the management of ethics, integrity, and disciplinary matters relating to misconduct within public administration. And included in that, in terms of ethics and integrity, we'll be dealing with anti-corruption through that technical assistance unit. The bill requires the minister to report to Parliament twice a year on the activities of the unit so that she gets guidance and also make sure that the unit is doing the work effectively. Under Clause 16, we deal with norms and standards. And the bill seeks to empower the minister to provide minimum norms and standards on, for example, the promotion of values and principles referred to in Section 1951 of the Constitution, capacity development and training, information and communication technologies in public administration, integrity, ethics, discipline, including the disclosure of financial interest, measures to improve effectiveness and efficiency of the institutions, disclosure of disciplinary action, and any other matter necessary to give effect to the administration of or the implementation of the bill. And The minister, when it comes to the promotion of values and principles referred to in Section 1951 of the Constitution, we acknowledge that she's not the only, or he, if next time they say he, it's not the only person who is responsible to promote those values. Even other executive authorities have got that responsibility. So the minister must prescribe minimum norms and standards promoting those values and principles in Section 1951 of the Constitution in consultation with relevant executive authority. This allows for a degree of uniformity in relation to norms and standards across public administration, which should have a positive impact on service delivery. And we don't believe that there will be reinvention of the wheel, where there's already norms and standards developed. I mean, in health, they're far ahead in terms of that. We have to look into those and make sure that they are implemented in collaboration with the executive authority in health. Clause 17 deals with the Office of Standards and Compliance. The bill establishes within public administration the Office of Standards and Compliance, whose objects are to promote and monitor compliance with minimum norms and standards set by the minister, taking into account that the three spheres of government are distinctive, interdependent, and interrelated. So that it's something that cuts across that interdependence and the distinctiveness of the different spheres is obeyed at all times. Clause 18 deals with the regulations. The bill empowers the minister to make regulations on, amongst others, matters required or permitted by the bill to be prescribed. The minister must make regulation insofar as they apply to municipalities in consultation with ministers responsible for local government and finance, as well as organized local government. By organized local government, we're talking about SALGA as it stands. We didn't put it as SALGA because if that name changes in the future, it means we have to come back and get an amendment. The minister must publish proposed regulations for public comments for a period of not less than 30 days in the Gazette. Clause 19 and the schedule deals with what laws are being repealed or being amended. And we are repealing Section 4, which deals with skills development and capacity building, Section 14 and 15, which deals with transfers and secondment of the Public Service Act. And the bill is also repealing the Transfer of Staff to Municipalities Act. That's the act that allows transfer of staff at provincial to local government by MECs. Thank you, Honorable Members, Chairperson. That's the end of the presentation.
Thank you very much for the presentation. The Deputy Minister and the Minister have arrived, and welcome both of you. Just to indicate, you know, clarity around the first meeting, where the Deputy Minister and the Minister could not attend, just to indicate they could, you know, they've got the right to be in that meeting. It was just a confirmation of the subcommittee work for the appointment of the Public Service Commissioner, which still has to go to the National Assembly. It was closed for other people, but the Minister and Deputy Ministers do have a right. In future, they can be part of those meetings easily. There's no problem around that. Okay, Honorable Members, now I can take your hands, starting with Honorable Du Toit on the issues that you needed to ask. Proceed, Honorable Du Toit. Honorable Marais will follow next.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to go back to page number 6. There are some statements there, and I would like to know what it is based on. Is there any objective independent legal opinions? Is it available? And if not, if so, how can we get it? And if not, how can we legislate on hearsay? Because this is hearsay. Then I'm also pointing out to some of the statements there, and I remind the committee of the following sections in the Constitution, 151.4 and 156.5. If we could get some interpretation from the department, how they see that. And then, Chairperson, what I want to know is how we're going to approach this now. We've got, according to the program, we've got a very short time to go through this law step by step, you know, section by section. And I don't know if the officials are going to be available, because we have to ask them, what do you mean by this, what do you mean by that, and why do you have this word, how wide is this word consultation, in consultation? I've previously mentioned in another sitting that it looks like somebody can actually consent to a demotion if you move him and he consents to being having a lesser salary. I mean, I know it's better to get from Gauteng to Cape Town, but I mean, sometimes the view is not worth the money if you would take a drop in pay. So I'm just asking these questions. You know, how long is it going to take to go through this? So time is very short. I'm not going to legislate something. I've seen some terrible legislation coming through Parliament, and I'm not going to put my name to it. I'm not convinced that I've gone through it all and I know what words mean. Sometimes words are wide and vague, and sometimes it's not. Okay, thank you. But my main question is on what's on page 6. Thank you.
Honourable Murray.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to find out just a few points. On the definitions, can I just find out, somewhere in the bill it also refers to organs of state. I think it refers to institutions and organs of state, but there's no definition for an organ of state. Is that not something, maybe it's very technical, but just to understand, you know, because it refers to institutions or organ of state, it wants this clarity on what do we mean by an organ of state, because it's obviously now open for people in terms of interpretation. The other question is that where we're talking about repeals of other bills and laws, acts, it refers to that everybody will have to be appointed in terms of the Public Service Act. What is the situation? I know in terms of provinces, their staff has already been appointed in terms of the Public Service Act, if I'm correct. But in terms of municipalities, their staff is not appointed in terms of that act. Is that in terms of the Labor Relations Act? What is that act? Because I don't see ever any reference to that side. I just need some clarity on that. Oh, and then the other thing is what you've mentioned about secondments. Do I read it correctly that the qualification for a secondment without consent is what is in then 6.2a? In other words, necessary skills, knowledge, that is the qualification for that secondment without consent. And then just on that point, just your view in terms of, it seems like, and I don't know exactly, Honourable Williams might have more knowledge on the Labour Relations Act, whether it speaks to that or there, or, you know, if that has been considered a possible conflict between those acts, because it seems like secondment without consent can take place for an unlimited period of time. In other words, permanent. There's no limitation or time frame or something in that regard, that hypothetically someone can be seconded permanently without consent. If this is a response on that, I'll appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, honorable members. Would you like to, hand from honorable Nyakembe.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I had, in the process of the presentation, talking about local government, but you avoided a situation where you make reference to SALGA because it might be changed in the process. Will I be correct that in your presentation, also in making reference to local government, that also implies that the ministry in the public service and administration, once, in fact, in the process of the bill, and even if the bill has passed, there will be that interaction if there's a need of secondment from one sphere of government to another, or transfer. Are you meaning that will that also be keeping the spirit of the Constitution in terms of the separation of power? That's one. Secondly, is in your presentation, especially on mobility of states, is that my assumption? That the last bullet point where you talk of the bill also provide for transfer of employees, you are making reference to Section 97, 99, 126, and 137 of the Constitution. Is my assumption correct if then within that, even if you have not mentioned Section 197 of the Labor Relations Act, that is also in line with that Section 197 of the Labor Relations Act. Because when you talk of transfer, because I think these sections from the Constitution do not necessarily speak to the transfer of the contract of employment, but then Section 197 now specifically talks to the transfer of the contract of employment. So my question is, it's within that spirit. That's what I wanted to raise those two chapters. Thank you very much.
Thanks, honorable members. Can I allow you to respond to the issues raised? Of course, you won't respond on the time one. On the issue of how far can we process, we'll cross the river once we are there, and we'll assess as members whether is that possible or not, and all those issues that honorable Detroit raised will actually occur at that level. For now, it's just a briefing. Let's allow it at that level. We'll see, of course. I agree that if you are not satisfied, you might not sort of swim through. But it's fine. For now, it's just a brief. We haven't reached that point at the moment. Can you respond to the matters that are raised?
Thanks, Chairperson. I will be assisted also by my colleagues who are here. The question regarding slide 6, whether there is a legal opinion on the statement. The state law advisors, because we had an input that came from SALGA. The state law advisor have got a full legal opinion in terms of those issues, and that was presented at the SALGA members assembly in December. So
Minister, I'm not sure what it is that we are referring to on page 6, which could either be a rumor or it's a whole lot of matters that we are addressing in relation to concerns that were raised by local government and how these have been articulated in the legislation. So exactly which one of those bullet points is the member Detroit referring to as a rumor or tested against any independent legal authority?
No, it's not a rumor, Minister. I'm just concerned about the statements. The first two bullets are the most important ones. It makes a statement that it does not undermine, and the second one, it does not undermine. So who says that? You know, it's logical for me that there must have been some authority speaking to it. And with my experience previously, you know, sometimes legal opinions, even within my own party's organization, will help for me in local government. When I ask my mayor, where do you base your decision on, I don't get it. So I'm sensitive to these kind of things, and we have a saying, you know, apply your mind, which I intend doing in this matter. You wouldn't like to see bad legislation yourself later, and we haven't thought it through. The Afrikaans is a pas jou gedachte, which is actually quite funny. But it's apply your mind. I'm going to apply my mind to it, and I must know about this. If there's been any, if the state people had it, then I want to see it. I want to read it, and I want to see if I agree. And I'm not an expert in that. If there's any gut feel around it, I would take it up. You know, that's it. So that's the most important one. Thank you.
I think that's slide 6 from the stakeholders. This issue came in. That's why we had to make sure that it's cleared up front. The next question in terms of that section 151 and 155 of the Constitution, I'll ask Advocate Simelane to deal with that one.
Maybe before that, the minister's hand is up.
I think the point that is raised by the TOIT we will continuously come back to, because he is very concerned about the fact that we should be quite certain that we are not undermining the powers that are vested in the Constitution on the three spheres of government. And we will be able to actually explain in the course of our deliberations with them, this is hopefully not the first, though not the last, exactly what it is that we mean by that. But we've been with this matter and various other independent lawyers at various workshops, and at one of the workshops, I did indicate in the public sphere that I was shocked beyond anything I could articulate that a member of the opposition actually had that insight into matters as to make a comment, because Honorable Murray was there, and he made a very incisive comment about our interaction with the Auditor General's office and the assessment of the budget of the bill. So we've been through this. I think I don't know how many lawyers and independent institutions we have consulted, and the document that the team has will show. And at that particular workshop, we'd invited a number of independent legal advisors to advise us on this matter. By the time we came to this, there were very few institutions that we had not consulted on this matter, but we'll be able to take you through any concerns on these matters, because they are important. We have no intention to undermine the powers of any sphere of government.
Thanks, Minister. Proceed.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think the Minister's response takes care of that point. I think we'll discuss it in detail a little bit later, because I'm more or less going to say exactly the same thing that the Minister has raised. Thanks.
Honourable Retoit.
Yes, thank you. I just want to maybe give the Minister one of my concerns around this. You can think about it, but if I've worked extensively in local government, and there's always the problem of the civil civil oversight, which is the council, you know, civilian oversight, the body, the council, and the struggle they have with the bureaucracy. Okay, so I can easily see without politics playing a role at all within parties and the difference in policies, that you could have a problem that you will have a mayor that at the council that has a problem with one or a few officials. And then it's not clear in the law is how this is going to be addressed, because if you are going to be, your office is going to be inundated with from all the municipalities, one or two or three, you might have a flurry from opposition parties or parties different from the central government. Then how is this going to be dealt with within the law, within local government? How would you investigate? How long would it take? You know, to even if the powers that you have today as a mayor, an executive mayor, to replace, and I'm not always saying it's correct, but to replace people that has been under investigation, or who takes the easy way out to say, okay, we'll take a package deal and we go, and it's easier for everybody. But there's in the back office, there's a pile of corruption lying around, which you also want to clear out, I know. So this process, this practical process of the conflict between civil oversight and bureaucracy is going to end up in your department, and you could be inundated. So I'm worried. Yeah, here you have, say, Detlef de Toey is now the mayor of Drakenstein, for instance, or Stellenbosch, and I have a problem. So now I'm going to hammer down on your door to say, look, move these people. I can't do it. You put them here. You must move them. I've got no power to move them. It's practical implications that we must think of, and it's got this line of thought has got nothing to do with politics and people, officials not towing the line or not want to enforce central government's policy versus local government, which might be another another parties. This is the situation that we have. It's going to be a mess, I think, from my experience, and I want you, Minister, honestly, to think about this, and we have to apply this in law if we have to make this a clean gliding process. Otherwise, my concerns are really playing the ball, Chairperson, and I'm very concerned about down there at the bottom, what's going down there. Thank you.
Yeah, would you like to respond to that, Minister?
Yes. You know, Honorable de Toey, our problem is precisely the mess you're talking about. If we had had this bill right from the beginning, the mess you're talking about would not be there, because local government and the interspace between oversight and the government itself at local government is one that needed to have been regulated a long time ago. You don't find it in national government, you don't find it in provincial government, because there are certain principles by which we apply in everything that we do. So what we're doing in the law here are setting the principles so that they cascade right down to the lowest level. The matters that you're talking about are of concern to us, but those are matters that will be dealt with in the regulations, which would follow the principles that we're talking about, because otherwise if we were to deal with each and every issue, that's the 362 pages that we've got now to. But it's the principles that we have to have, the principles of the Constitution adhered to by each and every sphere of government, so that we have a more effective government and a more efficient government. The two spheres of government, we're quite certain, are miles ahead in their efficiency. But local government still remains a big problem, and we would like them to benefit from the fact that we have one constitution, that constitution applies to them, and they need to be bound by the same principles of that constitution. But we have a long time, Honorable de Toey, and
I don't know if you've met Melissa, the head of our legal services. Melissa, the toy is in need of help on a daily basis. I'll give you her number. Every clause, every full stop, every exclamation mark, she'll be able to explain so that we can fast track them. Pardon? I have consented on her behalf. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thanks, honorable members, Minister. If there are no other things, honorable members, is there anything else? There are just two things that I just needed clarity on. Oh, that we are still answer. Okay. Proceed to answer the questions.
The definition of organ of state, we don't use organ of state in the bill. Not in the bill. It's in the presentation where we say which section.
Any employee or institution may be seconded to another institution or to any other organ or state in such a manner or on such a terms or conditions as may be prescribed.
Sorry about that. I missed that one. In terms of the organ of state, it's defined in the Constitution, and it excludes even your courts. They're excluded. They are not part of the organs of the state. So the organ of the state, excluding the courts, and I think there's other bodies, the parliament is not part of that. So the secondment will be in those institutions.
Just for clarity, I mean, is it difficult to bring that definition just in so that it's, I don't know.
I think that definition exists in the Public Service Act 15(3)(b). So if we look at that and see if we can transpose that and use the same terminology. Yeah.
Okay. Yes, also section 239. Yes. Yeah, A and B, they do talk of, yeah, but there's also where they clarifies, I can't remember, where it clarifies that excluding courts. It specifically is, we know once we pretend that courts are part, it's not like that. They just excluded first, excluding courts. Obviously, also Parliament, because it's an oversight body, cannot be an organ. It's an organ of state, but it cannot be a state. I don't know. Am I explaining it correctly? Okay. Honorable Du Toit?
Yes.
Honorable Nyakembe?
Before Honorable Du Toit, them coming in after their questions have been answered, ours will be forgotten. Can we allow the department to answer all questions? They note something that they will come up with after even our questions have been answered.
Fair enough.
And yours too.
Fair enough. But yeah, let's get all the questions answered. Then we can have follow-ups after the questions are answered.
The other question that was raised is on the secondment without concern. What is the qualification? I think we indicate there in the secondment that the person should have the skills required for the job they are seconded in, and that would be the criteria. And the receiving executive authority have to agree with the seconding executive authority before that secondment it's effected. The issue of secondment, could it be for unlimited period? No, we believe that secondment is short term. That's why even talking about that without concern you can do that if it's justifiable. So it will be short term. And the details of that in terms of how long is short term, we believe that the best place for it should be done in the regulation rather than in the Act, because circumstances change and you find that you have to amend the law to deal with a specific issue. But with the regulations, it might be easier to change that. The reference to local government, I think if I recall well, when we talk of local government, we talk about the minister responsible for local government. But where we are talking about the institutions or the executive authority, we refer to the municipality. And with regard to, will the transfer keep the spirit of the separation of powers? Definitely, it will be. That's the underlying theme throughout the legislation, that has to be respected at all times. That's why there should be the agreement between the seconding and the receiving executive authority. On the issue of transfers, I think if we go to whether section 197, I think in the section itself, let me just go to it. Clause 7, it also says the provisions of section 197 of the Labor Relations Act will also apply. So it is taken into consideration. I don't know if I left out one. There was a question regarding section 151 and 155 of the Constitution. The minister has addressed that one. Thank you.
Minister? Thank you, Chairperson. There's another question that was asked by Honorable Nyakembe, and it's a very pertinent one. He says he understands that we're using the term SALGA because we're not using the term SALGA, but we're actually referring to it. And he wants to know, is it put in place to ensure that we are cognizant of the different spheres of government, that at all times there will be consultation? And the answer is indeed. We will not willy-nilly go into the sphere of the third layer of government. We will make sure that at all times that the relevant institution, in this case it is SALGA, will be consulted on issues that we are dealing with.
Two hands again, Honorable
Detoit. Thank you, Chairperson. I just see on the bill that we've been printed out on the new one, the one with the blanks on the second pages. That's page 15. There's a paragraph 3, application of the bill clause 2. I see that the number C, it includes public enterprises. Did I read in the bill that it's not included, or is it now included? That's the one. I just want to make sure, because I've done some speed reading on the new one, so I'm not quite sure. And then, Minister, the regulations is always a sensitive point, because the regulations we don't have any power over, because you, a minister, decides what the regulations will be. It can be draconic, you know, in terms of somebody else's perception. I would rather see something written into legislation than have a blank check. You might be, you know, you might have a different view on it, but ministers change, and I hope they don't change you. But 5 years down the line, you can get another minister, or 10 years down the line, you know, and the regulations can change and could be tightened. It's very discernible that it could be done without You know, we having a discussion about it and legislate on it. That's the other thing. Coming back to some of the clauses that I just want to mention, that the type of thing that we need to discuss, I don't know if we will get much time, Melissa, because, you know, how are we going to meet on this thing? Because, you know...
That is for just you and Melissa. Why do you want to discuss it in
this meeting? Not in the open, okay. But I'm just looking at say chapter 3, that's number 5, 1. There's it says any employee, and there's another word may. We must clearly distinguish when it must be must and may and shall in law. I mean that is we'd rather write in another section than have something hang in the air. Then on 2A it says where reasonable grounds exist. Now, laws can say that was a reasonable guy who did it. You know, or the reasonable guy wouldn't have done it. But that is my point. Who decides, Minister, the what is reasonable? What is a reasonable grounds? I mean, if somebody goes, we don't want people, you know, in any bureaucracy, you will have people with power over another guy. He maybe wants to move this guy, he's a threat to him, or he doesn't like him, or whatever, you know, and there's bullying inside. We'll never know about it. No. But it's somewhere there. Now somebody decides, okay, we're going to move this guy. All right? Now we don't want people running to courts to decide that it was not reasonable. You see, reasonable is such a dangerous word and law. And then if the employee requests or consents, there is the possibility of silent threats within any corporate business. You know, it's very easy to be coercive and say, look, we want you to consent actually because if you don't, you know, you can kiss your what's name goodbye. If you're not going to have that promotion that's coming up in next year. We'll promote you, but you've got to go there. You see, that is the silent threats, and then. I mentioned the one about in 3B with unless the employee consents with the demotion of money or something like that. But these words are very tricky words in legislation. When I look at the next page 7, secondments, section 6, 2C, here it says that in the absence of consent, in other words, this guy doesn't want to, okay? All right, he's now... No, my children is in a good school, my wife has got a nice work, you know, I don't want to move from Table Mountain, you know, I want to be here. And then, it's after due consideration, by whom? You know, what is due consideration? Who's deciding? Who are these semi-gods that decide over somebody's life, you know? After due consideration of any representations by the employee, now, okay, he can put anything forward. If the secondment is justified, it can be moved. So we have three words here. In the absence, due consideration, and justified. Who decides what is justified? You know? Somebody might decide it's justified to do this and that, but I mean, do we want people to run to court? Do we want to have fights over reasonable, what is reasonable, what is justified, and that type of thing? What I'm saying, Minister, is we're dealing here with the secondment, which is I know why there's you focus on the secondment because we have a capacity problem, but we're talking about people's lives here, where they were born, where they grew up, where they want to be, where they don't want to be. We talk about people's lives here, and we hang it on to words like justified and reasonable. It's just a thought that I want to put. I don't know how it's going to be answered. I think it will take longer deliberation. We don't maybe have the time. But these are real concerns for me. Thank you.
Okay, let me take Honorable Mare before there's a response.
Thank you, Chair. Just maybe on that same point, that point 6. I think point 6.3, if the provisions in 6.3 is also in 6.2, because it was clearly said there, what is the intention of this? Now, 6.3 stipulates the intention in words. 6.2 don't. There it's the intention. And I surely think that, you know, like it is said, if it is in consultation with, you know, the two authorities, you know, where the continent is coming from and where it's going to, then it might underpin those problems. Because in the one section, it is qualified, and the other one is not qualified. So if that and it was said that is the intention. So if that has been brought in, then I think you can underpin a lot of those uncertainties. Also, in here, there's quite a number of times that it refers to must be determined in terms of applicable legislation, without indicating what applicable legislation, which is, you know, what applicable legislation are we referring to? Nowhere, I've looked to the back, there's nowhere reference to any applicable legislation. So I think for anybody considering this, at least there must be an indication of which applicable legislation are you referring to. I think, you know, that already will go a long way in addressing some of the uncertainties and concerns. Thank you.
Okay, responses?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. On the points raised by Honorable Tutoi, I think as we deal with the bill in detail going forward, some of the things will become much more clearer. The issues that he's already dealing with are issues that are not meant to be covered by this bill, because that's a different area of application. What he's dealing with is a normal day-to-day operational workplace environment, where between supervisors and subordinates, these types of engagements take place. Those are dealt with in terms of a completely different framework. That's the operationalization of relationships in a workplace environment. What this bill deals with, what it provides for, are just basic principles. For example, and Honorable Tutoi already accepts the rationale. In other words, the policy that informs these principles. For example, the principle of a transfer, that a transfer between the three spheres is a good policy to have. It's a good principle to have in place. He already accepts that, and that's all that is being provided for. How the transfers get effected on a day-to-day basis would not ordinarily be subject of this bill. It would be subject of a different framework, the Labor Relations Act, as and when those get applied. So we wouldn't be in a position, and it would not be appropriate to provide for that detail in this legislation. This bill is just purely a framework that is enabling for transfers to happen, for secondments to happen. But the issues that you raise about subjective use of an environment, subjective decision-making, those things would okay in any environment, but they would then be dealt with at that particular level when it happens. All that we're dealing with in this bill is giving that enabling environment for transfers and secondments to happen. But the detail wouldn't be in this bill. It would be in a totally different framework. So the concerns are quite correct, but they won't be applicable here. Thank you.
Melissa?
I just wanted to add that some of the words may seem very arbitrary to ordinary users, but in the legal sense, reasonableness is defined. There is a test in law for what is reasonable or unreasonable, and so it isn't as arbitrary as it would appear to the ordinary man in the street. These words do actually have meaning. As to the may, shall, must, it's really about what era you are in terms of law. People used to use shall, now they prefer must. May doesn't mean anything different in the negative. If you may not, it is the same as you shall not or you must not. It has a discretion in the positive use of the words. So I think some of those areas, when we have further discussions, we'll be able to take the honourable members through the areas and the legal definitions that are given to the utilization of those words. And then really it comes down to preference. But I think I needed to say that some of the words are not as arbitrary as to the decision of the executing authority to determine for themselves. There would be legal opinions that are provided to say that, Minister, this particular decision would not meet the reasonableness test, etc. And we can give those sorts of assurances.
Minister? By saying to Minister that Honorable Du Toit is not an ordinary man in the street. Just asked him to take you out for dinner and you call him an ordinary man in the street. But I mean, it's just a slip of the tongue. yes, I will be. I'll just comment on what I wanted to, but we are all together in making some comments. Honorable Du Toit is concerned about the fact that regulations do not have the necessary power or endorsement from Parliament. And I was going to say to him that actually that is a concept that is fast receding. We now in the executive normally bring our regulations and regulate with Parliament so that you are quite certain that the regulations and the law go hand in hand. That is the practice that we are now going towards. The reason why we use regulations is because it is easier to deal with regulations when and as and when the situation is different from the law, whereas amending a law would take as long as it has taken this law to be put in place. So we would much rather those that determine that that which determines the regulation is dealt with in regulation, and our record speaks for itself. With these regulations, we'll bring them here, and we shall then debate whether it is shall or must or will, but it will be passed by Parliament, so that you're quite certain that they do support the law as it stands. And the reasonable man has been dealt with. Can't be better than Du Toit himself. The law measures anybody as a reasonable man. That is the standard measurement of the law. And we use that ourselves as well. What do we mean by applicable law? Because this is a framework bill. It determines the way that government restructures itself and how it adheres to basic principles of the Constitution. But otherwise, there are laws that apply to each and every one of the principles that we're talking to. And I don't know if it would be possible or necessary to actually list those laws, but we could be listing all the laws that are applied by the various either levels of government or applied to by members of the executive. The labor relations law, the local government structures, all of those things. But what we're doing is setting the framework. But otherwise, within that framework, those laws that apply to that situation will be the applicable laws in that case. But if it is the pleasure of Parliament that we attach an annexure of these applicable laws, it will probably be all the laws that have to do with the public service in government.
Just one point of mine outstanding, and that was a reference to that.
Before you do that, just to agree with the minister that even Parliament has made it standard now that after every law that has been passed, legislation, thereafter there must be a regulation that follows that is brought before Parliament, meaning that the committee that will come, if the bill has been processed, will have to go through the regulations as well. So many these concurrence in terms of the cabinet together with what Parliament has already planned as well. Proceed, Honourable Marais. You'll follow Honourable Du Toit.
Mine was just outstanding the question about the wording of 6.2 and 6.3,
where 6-2 has drawn a lot of questions, whereas in 6-3 it is, you know, it says what the intention is. So maybe, you know, I've said Eve that qualification as in 6-3 is also in 6-2, that it might not, you know, draw all those questions about, you know, the agreement or the consensus or the in consultation between the, you know, the seconding and the seconded parties, etc.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Mayor, it's not going to be possible because if you look at 6.2, 6.2 is seeking to just regulate the relationship between the supervisor and the subordinate only. So it only tells you that when those two engage in that debate about a secondment, this is what would be required as between the two of them. But once you go over that, then 6.3 deals with how institutionally one sphere deals with the other. That's why you'll then have that explanation in 6.3. So you'll be able to put the explanation that you seek, that is in 6.3, in 6.2, because it's not applicable in that relationship as between those parties. I mean, that's a vertical relationship. But in 6.3, because it's a horizontal one, then you'd require that there be that consultation and an agreement between the receiving institution and the seconding institution. So that's the difference between 6.2 and 3. So it would be difficult to put what is in 6.3 into 6.2. All you need for the official being seconded is for that official to consent. And once you have that, it's fine. But even if you have it, for 6.3 purposes, you need additional requirements, which is further consent on the part of the receiving institution. So there is that difference between 6.2 and 3. That must be noted. Thank you.
Okay, Honorable
Detroit. You see, as Chairperson, since I'm so reasonable, and even the minister admits it, just one question. I want to know if these public enterprises are now in or not. Are they in or are they not in? I think somebody missed that question. But I just think what Advocate Samalani now answered is exactly what our problem is with when a law is written, Minister, is that if you have to explain to reasonable people who are supposed to be legislators what you mean, and they can't read it the first time, then you must write it over. That is my feeling about it. I'm not being reasonable. Yeah, I'm unreasonable. But I just think that it must be interpreted for the maybe less reasonable people also. It must be people who doesn't know all these fancy words and doesn't work with it, because it's written not for us. It's written for the people that we represent. That is why laws end up in constitutional courts, because it's been written in the first place, it's been written unclear. Why do you get lawyers on the one side and lawyers on the other side, and they both tell you you've got a good chance to win? Because maybe they want to make money, you know? They say, yes, of course, we've got a good chance to win. But laws are not well interpreted. See, so okay, so that's my point I want to make. But that's not a question. But I want to say to Advocate Samalani, I'm not stepping on you now, Advocate, but you must be careful what you say if you say that I've accepted something. I don't infer something that I've accepted something. This is not a court of law where I'm sitting and I'm shot by girlfriend and I've inferred that I knew she was behind the door or something like that. Just be careful when you say that I agree with something when I'm not. Okay, I know your background is maybe in court, but this is not a courthouse.
I just want to respond to the issue about application of the bill. I think the Honorable Ditoy is referring to the memorandum on the object of the bill, which starts from page 14. The memorandum actually just gives you an explanation of what is there. So if you look into three of that memorandum, the bill applies to the public administration, full stop. But then it explains there to say, the Constitution says the principles governing public administration applies to all those areas. But this bill only applies to public administration as defined in the definition section.
Minister? Thank you, Chairperson. In fact, as we go along, we are hoping to make sure that all other organs of state and state enterprises adopt a similar approach so that there is uniformity, so that a magistrate in some far-flung place of Mpumalanga knows that their rights are the same as those in magistrate's court in the Western Cape, where they can see the sea and the mountain. But what we're doing now is just regulating public administration, but what the Constitution requires is that all of these organs must follow the same principle. So we are hoping that public enterprises will follow the same route and actually have a law that deals with public enterprises and how they shall be governed, and it is very urgent and important. We are hoping that organs of state will also use the same example and go ahead and make sure that there is a law that they can follow. As it is, Chairperson, I'm not sure whether there are any laws that govern Parliament. Is there a DG in Parliament? Is a DG paid the same in Parliament as wherever? What is the benchmark, and et cetera, et cetera? So we are hoping that we can be the lead star to say it is possible. The Constitution requires us to do that, and we must all do that. We can't have a country that has a Constitution without the necessary laws underpinning that Constitution being put in place. I just wanted to say about transfer of people who might not want to be transferred. You know, we've had excellent examples here where we had a member of parliament here who was called Honorable Zille. Almost the following day, she was the mayor of the city of Cape Town. Immediate transfer. I don't know if there was any regulations followed. I don't know if she was consulted. 2 days later, she was the premier of the Western Cape. So, I mean, transfers are things that are normal in normal transactions of people and what they do in their normal lives. Between three spheres, thank you.
Minister, I can answer you on that. Political parties are the only institution in South Africa that is not governed by the Constitution. Because they do what they want.
It's unfortunate. What we're doing now is making sure that when we do have that situation, we do the necessary consultation with the people who are involved and the institutions that are involved.
Okay. Yeah, honourable members, I believe that all issues that were raised had been responded to, and possibly members do feel that they'll carry forward some of the discussions at a later stage. It's fine, but at the moment, I think, based on the presentation and the discussions, matters have been clarified, unless if there is any other matter from the members. Honorable Cimbi, are you fine? Great. Okay. Is there any other matter, maybe from the side of the department? And if not, I would like to take this opportunity to thank the department for coming to give this kind of brief. It is a necessary brief. It actually assists us to understand how far have the process has gone up to this far, so that once we come to the interaction, we are able to have information, background information, sufficiently to engage moving forward. Thanks for being there as well, Minister. And thanks to all of you, honourable members, for your participation and contribution. Yeah, I believe now we can adjourn the meeting and we had information. Thank you.